Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today, former BYU quarterback and BYU coach, Brandon Doman. Brandon, it's always good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
You bet. Now, we've got a lot of stuff to cover with you. And in celebration of the 100 years of BYU football, a central focus of this interview is going to be Lavelle's last game and certainly your role in that. But before we get to some of that stuff, what are you up to these days? What keeps you busy these days?
Yeah, thank you. I'm one week removed from sinus surgery, therefore my nasally voice. I apologize about that. But I'm sitting in my office here in Linden. My brother and I are business partners. We have a few different companies and brands that we operate together, and it's been a real blessing. We're 10 years into business together. It's been 12 years since I coached at BYU, so it was a little bit of a kind of recreating a career and a lifestyle for me and my family, and my brother and I found a really great fit together, and it's been a heck of a ride, and we're grateful for that. We make commercial and residential sporting equipment, basketball hoops, pickleball nets, light poles, poolside hoops, a lot of different products like that, and with the brand called Dominator. People call it the Dominator, but it's the Dominator. And then we have a trailer hitch manufacturing company called Waysafe. And it's a building I'm in right now. And we make a variety of different kinds of trailer hitches and all aftermarket accessory products for vehicles that fit in the insert of their receiver or their gooseneck or their weight distribution. We do a lot of different things, and I spend most of my time doing that. My kids are getting older and just raising a family. My wife and I are extremely blessed. We have six kids and just continuing to do the best we can to be the best we can. And it's been a great ride. We're super grateful.
You mentioned it's been 12 years since you were at BYU, and for something that for so long was such a major part of your life, whether it was as a player or as a coach, as you know, all of it, does that feel like a completely different life now?
You know what? I've been away from coaching for longer than I coach. I only coached for 8 seasons, and it's distancing itself. It's starting to feel like it was a long time ago, finally. And, you know, I go down to BYU and watch the games or go to an alumni event. I get in that stadium and all the juices, you know, flow, and it feels like yesterday. But life quickly moves on and you get extremely busy. So it is starting to feel like it was a long time ago.
Take me back to before college. Yeah. Was BYU always your school? Was that the school that you always wanted to be at?
I'm the youngest of 4 boys in our family, and all 4 of us played football at BYU. So from 1984, when my brother Kevin was a freshman at BYU, until 2012 or January of 2013 when I got let go, I had been walking the halls of BYU athletic department and the football facility and the stadium. I mean, that's 30 years. So it's been in my blood for my entire life. I can't remember a Saturday where I wasn't at a BYU football game or watching a football game. So, I got into my junior year of high school and started receiving scholarship offers to play football. And when BYU's offer came, it was done.
So then you come to BYU. What were the first 2 years on the team like then?
Yeah, it was hard. It was frustrating. I wanted to play. I wanted to be on the grass. It was an awesome experience being in the locker room, being with the players. I believed in myself. I believed in my ability to play. And so I was anxious to help the team win and get on the field. So while it was a great experience, it was also very frustrating at times and challenging to not be able to contribute like I wanted to.
How did you handle that? Because everyone's going to handle those situations differently. What did you rely on or lean on at the time to sort of get you through until, and we'll certainly talk about this coming up, when your time came?
Well, I was the beneficiary of excellent parents and grandparents and older brothers, and they kept me motivated. They reminded me of the grind. They reminded me of the goals that I'd set. And I was raised that to believe that if your mind can conceive it and your heart can believe it, you can achieve it. There were a lot of things that my mind could conceive. Just getting your heart to believe something requires a ton of work and stick-to-itiveness and grit and getting up and continuing to, you know, just to do it. And they kept reminding me that you just haven't quite gotten there. You haven't quite arrived at the accomplishment of the goal. Don't give up. And I also knew that preparation plus opportunity equaled success. And I just knew that at some point, somewhere, the opportunity would show up, and I wanted to make darn sure that I was prepared for the opportunity. So I just kept working. I just kept grinding away and trying to get as ready as I possibly could for the moment for the opportunity. And fortunately, and I think in many ways, I was very blessed and lucky, it came. The opportunity showed up.
Well, and it did, and it came in the form of a home game against New Mexico. And there was a lot going on in that game. What do you remember about that week and leading up? And are you going to be the quarterback? Are you not going to? Take me through what that build up to that game specifically was like from what you remember.
Well, at halftime of the Colorado State BYU game, which was the game prior to, Charlie Peterson had been injured. Brett Ingeman had already been hurt a couple games earlier. I was really the only quarterback left in the locker room. I mean, they just didn't have anywhere else to go. And I remember Coach Edwards coming to me at halftime saying, well, you're going in. And while it was sad and hard to see good friends, you know, injured, it was my opportunity. So I was so excited to go in and play. And that was the journey. That's where it really began for me. And the following Saturday was a bye. And so for that entire week, Charlie was rehabbing, trying to get back and ready. Lavelle wouldn't, he was very loyal to his quarterbacks, which I think was one of his greatest attributes. So he never came out and said, hey, Brandon, you're the guy. So I was practicing as the starter, not knowing if I was going to start. And it took until the following Wednesday, 10 days later, he approached me and said, you're going to play. You're going to be the starter. And I remember him announcing that to the offense and to the team that Brandon's starting on Saturday. We were in an inside run drill that day, and the center and I got in a fist-to-cuffs fight during practice. And the coaches are looking at us like, dude, what is going on? But it was that kind of an environment at that moment because we just were down and out. We had lost six games. We'd only won four games. Lavelle's last two games, and it was just heads were hanging. We just had lost confidence, and I think emotions were high. And here was this new quarterback, all excited to play, and he's the third string guy, and so the combination of all that just created some opportunity, frankly, I think that allowed me to rise to the occasion. And one of them was going fist to cuffs with Jason Sukanik, my center, during an inside run drill, and I'm grateful. I look back at that, and I think they realized, you know, we got a guy that wants to fight. And leading into that game, I think I needed to demonstrate to these guys that I was going to battle and we were going to go out and fight. And we came into that game, and here comes walking the prophet, President Hinckley, into the locker room and gives this, you know, last little speech, and they renamed the stadium after Lavelle Edwards that night. And there was so much emotion. And honestly, looking back now, 25 years, 24 years, why in the world did I get the opportunity to do that? You know, who gets to be Lavelle Edwards' quarterback in his last two games? And I pinched myself because, some of those experiences didn't seem real. And, the fans that remember that, it was a pretty surreal moment. And I'm just forever grateful that he had enough confidence in me and that the players and teammates just I've, my life has not been the same since. What a blessing.
I have vivid memories of that game specifically, and that was at the very beginning of my broadcasting career. And so I remember that game. I remember everything about it. I remember President Hinckley being there. And it's, you can look back on it now, and it's really funny because we know how funny President Hinckley was. But right. When you've got the prophet of the church coming into the locker room and saying, don't muff up Lavelle's last game, it's right. funny. And then you realize, oh, yeah, we probably shouldn't muff this thing up.
I know. He came in the locker room, and we got like a minute, 2 minutes before we got to run out on the field, and it's kickoff. And in came walking the prophet with his two security guards. It was a cold night, kind of a rainy evening. And I'm like, what's going on in here? How come there's, you know, what are these trench coat guys doing in here? And then it dawned on me that it was a prophet. It was like a church meeting all of a sudden. Everything just went reverent. And no more tape and Velcro and helmet straps. Everything just went reverent. And he gave this, you know, one for the Gipper speech. And he looked at us and said, don't muff it. And I was like, oh man, that was really helpful. But I've got a picture of the prophet in my home, anyways, in my bedroom. And I look at it every day, you know, this message of don't muff it. And it's meant a lot to me, and I don't want to muff it. You know, I want to make sure I capitalize on the opportunities, and that's, you know, it's been a great motto, for me in my life ever since that day.
Well, you certainly did not muff it. In fact, you said you wanted it to be something that, you know, you could build off of, and not just that game, that game specifically, and that opportunity, you did take advantage of it. You played great, and it was the start of an unbelievable run for you and for BYU football. So the fact that you were able to go out and perform the way you did, what did that mean to you? Was it one of those situations where you said you were, we're always ready. You never know when your time's going to come, but when that time comes, I'm going to be ready. Was it a sense of, yeah, I did take advantage of this because I've been waiting for this moment?
Well, I knew I was ready. And, you know, I had 2.5 years to get ready. Not very many guys get to do that anymore. You know, there's people transfer portal, and you got to come in and be ready to go. And there's just not very many guys that have the opportunity to sit on the bench and watch. And look back at BYU over the years, when the very best quarterbacks came in, they had time to ride the pine for a minute and learn and see the mistakes and to age and mature. And I had a chance to age and mature. And so by the time I went out there, I mean, I'm 3/4 of my way through my junior year. I was ready to go. And the coaches had done a good job. Robbie Bosco was my quarterback coach, and he had put, you know, a ton of time into me over, you know, a couple of months there. And I felt ready, and I was ready. And I think my teammates needed to see that. So, you know, the first drive was important to me. I wanted to go out there and make it happen. And I wanted to compete. I hadn't competed for a while too. I just wanted to go out there and compete against another team and know that this was my game. You know, my offense, my team, and just go out and compete again. And when that started happening, the adrenaline of that experience, you know, I think that's when I'm at my best. I don't know that I was ever a great practice quarterback. You know, I just, when the lights turned on and the adrenaline got going and I was with my teammates out there, it was a really great experience. And then I had Luke Staley standing next to me. So mm-hmm. For heaven's sakes, you know, that sure made it a lot easier in combination with all these other great players. It was phenomenal.
Well, you get the excitement and the enjoyment out of getting that game, and then you know that you've got one more. It's the last game for Lavelle, and it just so happens that it's against the rival in Salt Lake City. How did you approach that game? You know everything about what this rivalry means. Growing up a BYU fan, you know how important those games are, and then you have the added, you know, layer that it's Lavelle's last game. Walk me through the lead up on how you approached that last game.
Well, I think we had a little bit more confidence. Not a little bit. We had a ton of confidence going into that game, and I think it was generated through that last game against New Mexico. New Mexico had the best defense in our conference. In fact, Bronco Mendenhall was the defensive coordinator for those guys. And I think we had this momentum going into the game. Amazingly enough, we walked into that stadium, which I loved having it at the University of Utah. I don't think I would have rather been any other place. I grew up in the foothills of East Mill Creek right there, right by that stadium. And to be able to play in that stadium for Lavelle was I couldn't have drawn it up better. I walk out and they call the very first play. I throw a little 5-yard hitch route to Margin Hooks to my right. And Andre Dyson, who was one of their best corners they ever had there, played for years in the NFL. He sniffs it out. And as I'm throwing it, he's breaking. He intercepts it for a pick six on the very first play of the game. And I'm like, oh, flip, now what? You know, we got all this confidence, momentum, and this dang guy intercepts it for a touchdown. I ran off. I didn't run. I kind of jogged off the field. And Lavelle Edwards, in his stoic 30-year term as a head ball coach, just didn't look fazed. He didn't get mad. He didn't even look at me bad. He just kind of looked at me like, go get a drink. We got to go about right back out there, you know? And unbelievable. It was so helpful for me to know that this coach was not going to beat his quarterback up. You know, I was going to run off the field, get my water and go right back out there. And I think had he looked at me sideways or, you know, ripped on me or chewed me out or done something, you know, I don't know how I would have reacted, but I came off the field and he's kind of looked at me like, you're our guy and it's okay. You know, go grab a drink, do what you got to do. And I was, again, the beneficiary of some unbelievable people. And we went back out there and kept, you know, just kept playing. We jumped on him after that.
You controlled the major portion of that game after that play.
Yeah. We jumped on him and we started playing great. And then they made a quarterback change.
Yep.
And they needed some momentum shift. They needed a little bit of some moxie, and they put Darnell Arsenault in the game, and he came in and jump-started that team, and they caught a momentum wave, and it was hard to stop. They returned Steve Smith, I think, and returned a punt, and we just they caught a wave, and then it set up again a life-changing time for my life. A last drive in Lavelle Edwards' game, I just can't even believe it even happened.
It was, well, let's get into this because this is what everybody remembers. Look, and we all remember how the drive ended, but that final play doesn't even happen if you don't have the play on fourth down. You guys have to have a first down. I mean, that's game's over, basically. So the play on fourth down to Jonathan Pittman was gigantic. Where does that play rank for you in your own personal history?
Oh, I wouldn't call it, you know, look back and you know what? It's got to be number one, because without that one, none of the other ones really make any, that don't matter. They wouldn't have had the value that wouldn't have happened, frankly. And it was fourth and 13 and Lance Reynolds is the offensive coordinator. And I come into the huddle. Luke had just almost fumbled. You know, Utah fans would say he fumbled. And we had this one last shot. And I went in that huddle. And there's Jason Sukanik, this guy that 10 days earlier, he and I are fisted cuffs. And he's looking at me. And you know, I get the chills even thinking about it, because he's like, we got this. He and I are looking at each other. And if my center believes that we got this, he's looking at me, then we do. Got this. And I remember snapping the ball and Lance was letting me roll out because just could stay on the move and keep it alive. And I rolled out and there was one dead space out there. There was just one little dead spot and Michael was out there. And rather than throw it into the herd, I threw it to the dead space and he ran into that spot and caught it. And why, how, man, you know, gosh, for me, it was a miracle. And to one, have the thought, I'm going to throw it there into that dead space over there, and for Michael to react and have it work was, you know, a miraculous moment.
So let's go through the final play then, the game-winning play. And this play has always meant a lot to me because I actually, for those that aren't aware of kind of how media works, the press box is so far away from the field that with a certain amount of time, they'll usually let the media members go down to the field so that when the game is over, they have quicker access to things. And so we had just been let in to that corner of the field right before that drive started. And so as you are beginning that final play, I am literally standing on the goal line the direction that you start to run. So I can see it in my mind's eye like it was yesterday. Take everybody through what the play call was and how that play developed.
Well, Bosco came out. Lance Reynolds was up in the box. So Robbie Bosco came out into the huddle and he said, listen, this is what we're going to do. We just thrown two passes to Jonathan Pittman. Then we handed it off to Luke. Luke ran us down there. We're on like the 4 yard line and they decided they were going to have me run it instead of Luke, which was amazing. They come out and they say, okay, we don't even have this play in the playbook. We're going to run QB sweep right. Brandon, you're going to take the ball from under the center. We're going to line up in this formation. Luke, you're going to lead block. And Brandon, you're going to run a sweep right. And we need you to get in the end zone. And then, you know, he gave this little pep talk to everybody and said, if you've ever blocked, if there's ever been a time that you got to block, right now is the time. And those dang guys, I mean, every last 10 of those other guys on that field, if you go back and watch that, it was such a gutsy effort by them. There's a couple guys that just, Tavita Ofengawe, and I mean, this was some really remarkable blocks on that play. Kalani Sitake's in there, and Luke Staley's in there, and those dang guys make it possible for me to just barely fall over the end line, and my elbow falls over the goal line, and the ball's in the end zone, and they raise up for a touchdown, and there you go. It was pretty amazing.
Could you have ever imagined being a part of something that big? Because it wasn't just the game. It wasn't just against Utah. It was Lavelle's last game. This was the last one, and that is the lasting memory. Could you have even imagined being a part of something like this?
No. I dreamed my whole life of being the quarterback of BYU, but you know, I sat next to Patty the other day in that 100 years celebration in the BYU TV thing. And there I was sitting next to her. And I'm just so grateful that it happened. And it really did change. If it changed one person's life, it changed mine. And the course of my life has not been the same. And it wasn't about me. It was 100% about Lavelle Edwards and our coach and this icon and this moment of congratulating him and sending him off appropriately. And we put him on our shoulders and we carried him off the field. And I remember Patty came in the locker room after the game and she was in tears and we just were able to celebrate Patty and Lavelle, you know, and it was such a remarkable experience to get to do that. I think about it and I don't know why I got to do it, but I did. And I'm forever grateful for it.
Well, your career at BYU was not over. You still had one more year, and what a year it was going to turn out to be. We will talk about that. When we return, we will have more with Brandon Doman as we continue on with the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. Hey everyone, Jason Shepherd here to talk about one of our other great podcasts on BYU Radio, Her Why. It's all BYU women's athletics all the time. The podcast is hosted by my colleague, Lauren McLean. She interviews coaches like Heather Olmstead, BYU athletes like basketball's Amari Whiting, and legends like soccer star Ashley Hatch. You'll hear stories of triumph, trials, and toughness. If you're a big Cougar fan, you should check out the Her Why podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest is former BYU quarterback, BYU coach, Brandon Doman. And before the break, we were talking about that final win, that historic win over Utah in Lavelle Edwards' last game as coach of the Cougars, and just an unbelievable memory for BYU fans that were able to witness that, whether it was at the time or since, and having to look back on it, just an unbelievable game. But for you then, getting those opportunities in the last two games against New Mexico and then against Utah, it then sets things up for you as the quarterback going into 2001. We obviously know how it played out. Did you guys know how good you were going to be going into that year?
I don't think we knew. We wanted to prove to everybody that that was the case. I go back to that off season. We worked our tails off. I mean, the new coach comes in, Gary Croton comes in. He brings in a new strength and conditioning coach named Coach Omer. And I'm telling you, for some reason, it was like, I'm going to prove to you guys that I am the king of the king of the hill in this conditioning coaching. And he worked us so hard. And it was amazing to look back at that. We had some leaders across the board, from Ryan Denny to Brett Kiesel to Justin Enna. And we had the best football player in the college on our in the entire country, and Luke Staley, on our team that year. I mean, there was no one better. And we had Reno Mahe, for heaven's sakes. We had some football players. We knew it as we were going through the summer, and we got into fall camp, and we were starting to demonstrate it through practice. And man, we could not wait to start that first game against Tulane. And I just don't think anybody else was expecting it. And that's maybe why it made it so special, is that we blew the top off that, you know, the stadium there, and it was really a fun thing.
You mentioned guys like Luke Staley, and I mean, just an unbelievable team. And what an unbelievable year with so many different games. We could pick any game and talk about how dominating you guys were in that game. Are you able to appreciate the season for what it was without thinking about how it ended? The what if aspect of it? Are you able to appreciate it for what it was?
Oh, no question. I mean, we didn't have a lot of depth. And so everybody had to chip in that year. You know, Luke, you know, bless his soul, he got beat up pretty good that year. And it's, you know, it's impacted him throughout his life. He's pretty banged up, but he was so gritty. And then I just go across the board on everybody going through that year. By the time Luke broke his leg in that Mississippi State game, our last win in Starksville, we were just, you know, crawling to that victory, and we got it. And we had to come back from behind and win that one. We had just come from behind to beat Utah. We just had come from behind to beat all these other teams on the road, and we had to go do it one more time down in Mississippi. And, you know, when Luke broke that leg, and I think the college football world just kind of relinquished, you know, the fact that BYU's not as good anymore, and they wouldn't let us play in the Fiesta Bowl against Oregon. And you know, it was hard. It was hard to regroup physically and mentally and emotionally. We had to fly out to Hawaii late, you know, kind of early December when there weren't any games going on, and we were pretty beat up. And so, no, I look back at that, and we had 12 games in a row of victories. Yep. And I think it was about as absolute best we could possibly muster as a group of guys. And it was a remarkable experience.
With your own journey and having to wait so long, and, you know, 3/4 of the way through your junior year, and then you get those two starts, to begin that year as the starter and then for you to play as well as you did, how much, I don't know if validation is the right word, but I'll use it. How much validation was that season for you on a personal level?
You know, I don't know that I ever look at it that way. I think because of what had transpired with those two games with Lavelle and how gracious and good he was to me at the end of that season, and the opportunity with Coach Croton, I just wanted to win for BYU. I didn't care. I mean, And even going into the NFL, I don't know that I ever dreamed to be an NFL quarterback. I dreamed to be the quarterback of BYU, and I just wanted to win for the Cougs. I mean, that's what it was all about. And I think it made it even more special because it was about our team and our fans and our school, and I didn't care much about anything else.
Well, you mentioned that it's not really something that you really thought about in terms of being a guy that gets drafted in the NFL, but that's exactly what happened. 5th-round pick by the San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, with the long history that Steve Young has with that organization, there's a lot of ties between them and BYU that go certainly even beyond just Steve Young. But when you did get that opportunity, how did you react to that?
Oh, man. You kidding? there was only one NFL team that I cared about because I was a Steve Young fanatic. And he had just finished a couple years before that. And I was a massive 49er fan. And I watched every game. I mean, I could tell you anything you want to know about the 49ers in the 90s and even in the 80s. And there I was walking into their facility and the Super Bowl trophies as I walked in. You know, Steve Young's jersey all over. He was beloved there, is beloved there. He was living there at the time and still lives there. And so it was pretty cool, experience to get to go out to San Francisco. I met some unbelievable people, even to this day, that have been a blessing to my life. And it really helped give me some good direction moving forward.
3 years in the NFL, is that right? How would you categorize your 3 years in the league?
Oh, it was up and down. It was a really hard environment for me because it's hard to shine in those settings for me. It was hard for me to stand out in a controlled practice environment, frankly, in a controlled preseason environment. The coaches were somewhat conservative and trying to make me fit this mold that I didn't fit into. It just didn't fit. I think, you know, had I been drafted a little higher, where they had felt a little more investment in me and a little bit, you know, they'd put a little more money into me and maybe invested early game, you know, snaps into me and things like that, I think it would have played out differently. Cause I do think I would have played well and I just didn't have a lot of opportunity. And so it was up and down. I ended up in Buffalo playing for the Bills for a minute. I ended up in Washington playing for the Redskins for a minute, then back to the 49ers. And it went about as good as I practiced, honestly. And by the time I was done, I was going to have to go to NFL Europe and try and rebrand myself, reestablish myself. And Bronco Mendenhall was sitting in the San Francisco airport trying to convince me to be the quarterback coach. And it was the right thing to do, to leave and go coach. But that's about how it went. But it was everything you'd imagine. It was with being a third string quarterback standing on the sideline in the 49ers, it was such a remarkable time.
However long you had continued to play, was the plan, at least in your mind, always to go into coaching, or was that something that just kind of happened?
I wouldn't have quit playing. I would have gone to NFL Europe, and I would have tried to push that, lengthen that career as long as I could have. And I don't know if that had been 1 year or 8 more years. I don't know what that would have looked like. And then I was going to, you know, go from there and consider going back and getting an MBA and moving off my life. I had seen the lifestyle of the coaches and their wives and their kids, and I didn't aspire to it at all. And my wife, frankly, made it very clear that that's not in the cards for us. And I got a phone call one day from George Curtis, who a longtime friend and athletic trainer at BYU for many, many years, and just a man that I love and adore. And he called me and he said, "Brandon," he didn't mince his words. He said, "Brandon, you're supposed to be the quarterback coach here at BYU." I'm like, "What?" He said, "You need to think about it and consider it." And I said, "Well, why are you saying that?" He says, "I don't know." He says, "I've just been sitting here and it dawned on me that you needed to be the guy." And it wasn't but a few minutes, you know, not, I don't know if it was minutes or a couple days. I can't remember when it happened, but there I was on the phone with Bronco Mendenhall and him asking me about whether or not I would have any interest in doing it. And by the time that phone call happened, I'd thought a lot about what George said. I told Bronco, I said, "You know, I am interested." I had now like 3 days before he flew out to visit me for the interview. And between that phone call and the interview, there was no way he was going to walk out of that interview without saying, you know, offering me the job. That's how bad I wanted it. And as you know, the blood started boiling and my wife jumped on board. I knew it was the right thing.
Was it just an added bonus that it was BYU, or was BYU the place? That's, if you were going to coach, that's where you wanted to do it.
That's why I did it. I just had three losing seasons in a row. Bronco was hoping to rebuild it. He said all the right things. When he came out to the interview, he brought Lance Reynolds with him. I mean, this is my coach. Lance was my guy. And here's Lance sitting there, and they're interviewing me about being the quarterback coach. And I wanted to come help them win. I wanted BYU to reestablish its ways, and I wanted to be a part of it. And I knew I could help quarterbacks. I didn't have to worry about anything else other than trying to help John Beck be the best John Beck could be. And I felt like I could help him. And I was only a few years older than him.
Yeah.
But I felt like I could, you know, help him be successful. And that was a heck of a time.
Well, you mentioned John Beck, Max Hall, another guy. How rewarding was it to see their success? Because those are two of the greatest that did it.
Yeah. It was as rewarding as it was playing. Some of the victories that we had with John and Max as a football coach, the emotion of the win was more emotional and more enthusiasm for me than when I was a player. And so different for sure, but I loved every minute of coaching those guys to the types of wins they had, and being a participant in that was really a rare and unique experience. I'm so grateful I got to do it.
You were in the middle of the program when the team transitioned to independence. We all kind of saw it from a distance. You were obviously inside and heard all of those conversations on this is an option for us. Should we do this and all that stuff? What was that time like inside the program as you're making what would be a wholesale change at the time and a risky one at the time?
Yeah, it was pretty divided. Our staff was pretty divided. There was a lot of positive and negative surrounding the idea. I know Bronco wanted to do it. We wanted to establish ourselves as a national brand in a P5 conference at the time. We knew we'd been left behind by TCU and Utah. And honestly, we'd been left behind. And we couldn't allow for that. We didn't want to allow for that to happen. And so was it the best thing to stay in the Mountain West Conference and try and maybe it would have been. But ESPN, as our partner, we just by the time it came decision time, you know, for myself, I was 100% on board for it.
When you look at that time, there's so much change going on. And then one of the changes affects you directly because you are then promoted and hired on as the offensive coordinator. So how different was that for you making that transition from the quarterback's coach now to running the offense?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it. I may have made several mistakes in a lot of areas that I think had I had a little bit more experience, you know, I wouldn't have made. And I would have, you know, there's times when I go, gosh, I would certainly like to relive that or redo some of those things again. And the reality is I probably would have made the same decisions in the moment that I made. And so, where could I have gained a little bit more experience? And there were several times where other schools had reached out wanting to hire me and to do different things. And I never left. I didn't want to leave. But in hindsight, you know, professionally, could I have gained some more experience in going and coaching at another school or getting tutored by another guy, you know, have had access to somebody? Should I have gone into the NFL and been a quarterback coach for a period of time and then made my way back? I always dreamed of coming back to BYU and being the head football coach. But was it going to require me to go on another highway for a little while and make my way back to Utah and do that? I think professionally probably would have been the right move, you know, take a job. And advance myself in the career, learn a lot more from some people that I probably could have really learned from. I had some limited, I think there was some limited learning as a coach that I had, and I think I could have expanded it. Outside of that, I don't know that would have changed anything. I'm so grateful to get to do it.
How difficult was it for you then to handle the time when you were let go and, you know, with it being such a place that was so close to you on a personal level beyond just being a job, how did you handle that time?
It was extremely challenging. When my brother approached me, it was probably two months after I was let go. I wasn't finding a job that I wanted. There were plenty of job offers. It just wasn't anything that I was that excited about. And so I wasn't going to take a job that I didn't want. And I had little kids now. Now I'm a dad of family and kids, and I had other responsibilities. I was the bishop of my ward. I was 34 years old or whatever, 35 years old. And we had this little flock of family and friends that I was now 6 months into being the bishop of my neighborhood. And some people were like, man, he was the offensive coordinator and the bishop at the same time. I'd have never traded that. I mean, that blessed my life, had an impact on my life more than anything. And I was like, what do I do here? You know? And so there was a lot of reflection, and 12 years later, and I look back, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for what happened. It's shaped me so much. And I think everybody needs to have an opportunity to get, you know, let down or let go or get fired in some way, shape, or form, and establish yourself again, and to have the grit to do what you need to do to, and to figure it out. And I don't hold any grudges for Bronco or for BYU. I mean, I think everyone was trying to do the right thing. And I go back into that stadium right now, and I cheer those guys on this year. And I'm just, like I said, I'm so grateful for BYU and for what it is and for what it's offered me. There's no place like it in the world. And that time as a coach has impacted me professionally. It's helped me as a father. It's just in every way. I got offered that I was going to be the head coach at Weber State University a year later. And I just wasn't the right thing. Jay Hill was supposed to be the head coach at Weber State and not Brandon Doman. And it just was, it was the right thing for, he was the right guy and he did such a great job. And it wasn't time for me to be a coach in my life anymore. And I'm just so grateful for those kinds of, you know, personal revelatory experiences that are real for me. And I just know they are. And you trust in those instincts and the direction you're given. And I'm grateful for that.
How much along the course of your life with the ups and downs and things that, that you dealt with as a player and coach and things, how much did it strengthen your faith?
Oh man. I was surrounded by so many unbelievable people with exceptional faith. But as a student athlete at BYU, you get to know the president of the university, the vice presidents, the professors, you know, everybody in media, from your doctors. I mean, just think about all the unbelievable people you get to be surrounded by. And if you choose to absorb it and to take the mentorship, and like I said, there's no place like it in the world. And I was in this faith-based environment, being tutored and mentored by unbelievable human beings and teammates, and it shaped me more spiritually in my faith than anything. And today, you know, I've got 6 kids, and my wife and I have been on a journey, and it's been a faith-based journey. And we lean into our faith every day. And I've been able to come to know things for myself personally that I'm just so grateful to know. And it'll shape the next 45 years of our lives until we're done. And I'm grateful for that, for the faith aspect of it. BYU played a critical role in that in my life.
You've mentioned your family, your wife, and your kids several times. How much of a steadying foundation has your family been in your life?
My wife's unbelievable. She's so unusual. And anybody that knows her knows that. And so all 6 of our children came to us through the miracle of adoption. We've been on our journey. It's been a Brandon and Alicia Doman journey. And our kids are unbelievable. They're so gritty. And I'm so proud of them. I've got adult children now and younger kids. I just watch them become who they're going to become. And I'm just so proud of them. And it's just been a heck of a journey. And I'm grateful for it. And we're just, I feel like we're just getting started. So it's been fun. We stayed in Pleasant Grove, been in the same home. When I was coaching at BYU, I was in the same house and just surrounded by so many awesome people. So we don't want to change anything.
Well, you said you know you're on this journey. What do you think's next for you guys?
Oh man, I hope there's some grandkids coming at some point. I don't know. I'm still kind of young, but I watched my brothers and their grandkids. I'm like, that looks pretty cool to do that. Right now, I have the opportunity to be the stake president of the Young Single Adult Stake in my area. It's called the Alpine Utah Young Single Adult Stake, And I'm 3 years into serving in that capacity from an ecclesiastical standpoint. And I'm around 2,500 young single adults every all week long. And they're some of the most unusual, talented young adults you'd ever imagine. And getting to do that is spectacular. So I'm going to do my very best until they take that away from me and and just keep moving forward.
Well, Brandon, thank you so much for doing this. You were one of the best quarterbacks that BYU ever had, and it was an absolute pleasure to watch you, to cover you. And as great as you were and what a great example you were on the field, you were just as great of an example off the field. And I thank you for that, and thank you for doing this today. Thank you so much.
No, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you. Great job. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thanks once again to my guest, Brandon Doman. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.